We might expect that in such an academic context, the German mineralogists would begin to entertain grandiose theories of the Earth, as we saw happen in France and in Scotland. But they didn't. These German scholars appeared not to be interested in searching for universal causal laws. They were, in fact, much more empirically oriented than interested in theory. They far preferred to gather information about the various forms of solid materials found on the Earth. Their focus stayed on the Earth and its features. They were not as much interested, for example, in the development of life as were the theorists of the Earth. From what I've said about them, you might think they were only interested in practical knowledge. Well, they were practical, of course, but it wasn't always clear that the empirical information they gathered, as we'll see shortly, was going to yield practical benefits. And it's not as if they never used their data to make inferences about the Earth's past either. They did. It's just that their approach was not to go out seeking universal causal laws about the history of the Earth. To the extent they had ideas about the Earth's history, they came as implications from their classification of a wealth of empirical information. I want to emphasize that this German mineralogical tradition is both interesting in its own right, and it's also really important for later developments. I say this because many in the early 19th century, especially on the continent, liked to identify with the empiricism of this tradition. Not only so, they associated themselves with it in order to dissociate themselves from the more speculative traditions of the theorists of the Earth. In addition, some key notions in later geology came from this tradition. I'm thinking here of the importance of rocks, and even the idea of a rock formation. So let's turn our attention to what's in this tradition. By far, the central figure in this 18th century story is Abraham Werner. Werner was born in Silesia, but he studied and taught later at the Mining Academy in Freiberg in Saxony. He's something of a mysterious figure since we don't have a lot of information on him. He published a little during the last quarter of the 18th century and some after the turn of the new century, but not much. What we know of him and of his system comes from the little he did publish, from what scholars have found in unpublished materials, and from the students who flocked to Freiberg to hear him. That's where his reputation was made, as a teacher. I've done a lot of my own research in the early German Romantic period, and I can tell you that if you were young and at all interested in natural science at the end of the 18th century and the beginning of the 19th century, one of the places you just had to go was to Freiberg to hear Werner for a while. The great German writer Johann von Goethe, who began his climb to fame in the mid-1770s, was a convinced Wernerian and remained so his entire life. Now, Werner did not spring up out of nowhere. He was deeply indebted to that old German mineralogical tradition I mentioned a moment ago. So we need first to learn what Werner inherited from his predecessors. Once we've done that, we'll examine what he contributed that earned for him the international reputation he acquired. By the 18th century, there had grown up many different ways of classifying what were known as minerals. One common classification scheme included four classes. First, there were what were called earths. This is the solid matter of soils, but it also included rocks. The second class was metals. I mentioned metals above. Materials like copper, lead, gold. These had obvious uses, and therefore it's not surprising they constituted a class by themselves. Third, there were salts. Salts were dry, solid materials that resulted from interaction with acids. Sometimes they were soluble in water, sometimes they were resistant to fire. The fourth and last class of minerals was the sulfurs. We might call them hydrocarbons. Here there were substances that burned, like coal and bitumen. As I mentioned earlier, German mineralogists had a tradition of gathering empirical information about these various forms of solid materials found on Earth. We're interested here primarily in the first class of minerals, the earths. We'll look at the metals and sulfurs when we come to the story of the chemical revolution of the 18th century in Lectures 5 and 6. Earths, remember, were made of the solid matter of soils, and they included rocks. Let's divide the earths, then, into rocks and non-rocks.